The success of everything hinged on Otoki, the intermediary. She kept it all to herself, sharing nothing with others. Young Master Itaro, still confined, couldn't freely open the shop or venture out often. So, he couldn't visit Tagasode every day, even when she was at the courtesan's house. The woman, frustrated by this, would send a summoning letter. She'd do so as soon as 2 days passed without seeing him. Since Tokuju was the messenger, it was no surprise he was adored by Tagasode. "Why do you recoil and keep your distance from someone who cares for you so much?" Hanshichi asked again. "Do you think the future entanglements would be too troublesome?"
"There's that, yes. But the madam is a kind person. I doubt things would get too complicated there. As I mentioned before, whenever I go to that courtesan's house and sit beside the oiren, a strange chill runs through me. I just can't bear it, no matter what."
"I don't know why. I don't understand it myself." Tokuju made a face as if lost in deep thought.
"Has any woman died at that establishment recently? I haven't heard any such stories. Many apparently died during the great earthquake, but it seems no one has since.
Anyway, unlike the previous master, both the madam and the young master are good people. There are no rumors of mistreating the courtesans, nor any tales of double suicides."
"All right, I understand. Don't tell anyone about today, okay?"
After cautioning him to secrecy, Hanshichi parted ways with Tokuju. "No matter what, this time I must find that fellow Toramatsu." Hanshichi sought out the back alley tenement where Toramatsu and his sister had lived, meeting the landlord. The landlord also didn't know the siblings' whereabouts. However, he spoke of a rumor that late last year, Toramatsu had quietly returned from somewhere. He had then visited a nearby temple, offering some money. They immediately went to the temple, where at first, the monks were vague. But eventually, they revealed that on the 15th of last year's end, Toramatsu had suddenly appeared. He had paid 5 ryo in gold. "Toramatsu's parents are buried in this temple, but he's always been a pleasure seeker. Despite living nearby, he's never properly made offerings during Bon or New Year's. Whatever he was thinking, he suddenly came to us, asking for memorial prayers. He unusually left 5 ryo, the chief priest recounted, looking puzzled. And then he said something like this: 'My sister has also been missing for some time, and I don't know where or how she is. So please consider the day she left home as her death anniversary and offer prayers for her soul.' When I agreed, Toramatsu was overjoyed. He thanked me profusely and then left." As they left the temple, Shota whispered, "Indeed, that fellow Toramatsu is quite peculiar. We absolutely must track down that guy. Since he gambles, he must have friends, right? You somehow figure out a way to pinpoint his whereabouts for me."
"Yes, I'm sure I can manage something.
I'm counting on you."
The two made a promise and then parted ways.
The next day, when Hanshichi's wife went to Shota's home in Mado to visit, she found their child's measles had unexpectedly worsened. It seemed Shota and his wife couldn't leave their child's side. Hearing this, Hanshichi thought the Toramatsu matter wouldn't progress for a while. And indeed, Shota didn't appear at all after that. Warm days continued into February, making everyone believe spring had arrived. But then, 4 or 5 days later, it suddenly turned cold from evening. It seemed to have started falling in the middle of the night. Waking up in the morning, everything was covered in white.
"It's spring snow, nothing to worry about."
As he said this, the snow stopped. Around 10 in the morning, the sound of melting snow, busily dripping from the rooftops, filled the air. With no pressing duties for the past few days, Hanshichi left his house immediately after lunch. He knew he couldn't just idly wait for news from Shota forever. So he followed the thawing road and headed for Kanasugi. He visited Tokuju's house, and when he quietly called him out,
Tokuju appeared immediately. "Sorry for the bad roads, but could you come to that place we visited before? I'll lead the way." "Oh no, it's quite all right." Passing between the mansion and the temple, the two stood on the paddy field path, where snow still lingered. "Straight to the point. Have you been to Tatsumise's courtesan house since then?" Hanshichi inquired. "Not at all," Tokuju said, shaking his head. "And it seems Otoki has given up as well. She no longer tries to force me to come, which is a relief for me. Also, I hear from Tatsumise's establishment that Otoki herself is soon to be dismissed. However, Otoki isn't easily swayed, they say. So it seems there's some internal turmoil happening. Where's this woman Otoki's home? They say Honjo, but I don't know the specifics myself." "I see. Sorry to have called you out on such bad roads. This is duty calling. Please forgive me." After sending Tokuju home, Hanshichi pondered for a while. Clues and fragments of information kept piling up, yet he couldn't piece them together. Couldn't form a single solid conclusion. What exactly was he investigating anyway? He had no clear idea, no certain direction. Following the vague tale of a masseur searching for Tatsuise's lodging, he stumbled upon the elopement of a fortune teller's daughter. Were these two incidents truly connected, or were they completely unrelated events? He still couldn't fathom it, still couldn't tell. After all this effort, all his diligent investigation, how much good would it really do? He had absolutely no idea if it would bear fruit. Yet it wasn't just a simple curiosity. Hanshichi found he couldn't bring himself to abandon this case. Somehow, this mystery felt like it had deeper layers, profound depths waiting. Even if it feels like wasted effort, dig a little deeper, he thought. He ran an errand to Ueno Yamashita, intending to go straight home, but then changed his mind, turning his steps toward Araya rice fields. It was a bitter cold day, just after a snowfall, and by the time he reached the fields, dusk had fully fallen. Carrying his cumbersome umbrella, a silent burden, he walked steadily along the thawing, muddy path. As he neared Tatsuise's lodging, a woman emerged from the gate. He couldn't clearly see her face in the fading light, but her silhouette strongly suggested it was Otoki. Hanshichi immediately followed her, watching her disappear into the noodle shop he'd visited before. Assuming she wouldn't recognize him, he waited a moment. Hanshichi then ducked under the shop's curtain, a quiet shadow. Inside the small shop, besides Otoki, there was another man. His attire, a patterned cotton jacket with a flat obi, immediately told Hanshichi that this was no ordinary citizen. The man looked to be about 25 or 26. Dark-skinned and a robust Edo native, he seemed to have been waiting for Otoki here. And now they sat facing each other, quietly drinking sake. Hanshichi settled into a corner seat and casually placed an order. Both the man and the woman occasionally glanced in his direction, but didn't seem particularly wary. They warmed their hands together over the brazier, talking intently in hushed voices. "Well, it's come to this. There's no helping it now," the woman said. "If I don't show up, the curtain won't close, will it?" the man replied. "If you keep dawdling, if they commit double suicide, we're ruined," the woman whispered, almost threateningly. He couldn't hear anything clearly after that, but hearing the word suicide, Hanshichi's heart began to pound. He suspected a woman named Dara Shode might be planning a double suicide. The case seemed to be growing darker, more complicated. Hanshichi held his breath, straining to hear every word. It sounded like a deeply intricate conversation, and the woman's voice grew even softer, more secretive. Even with Hanshichi so close, the secret remained unspoken to him. Enduring the frustration, he simply watched the scene unfold. It seemed they had reached a decision. Soon they settled their bill and left the shop. After letting them get ahead, Hanshichi also rose. As he paid for his soba, he asked the proprietress, "Madam, wasn't that Otoki-san from Tatsuise's lodging who just left?" "That's right," she confirmed. "And who was the man with her?" "That was a man named Tora-san," she replied.
"Tora-san,"
Hanshichi murmured, his eyes suddenly gleaming.
"Wouldn't that be Toramatsu?"
"The elder brother of Okinbo, the fortune teller. Is that right?" My, you certainly know a lot, she said, surprised. Han Shichi was suddenly deeply intrigued. Giving a casual greeting, he stepped outside. The retreating silhouettes of the two, walking side by side down the path, appeared as dark smudges in the lingering, faint light of the snow. Han Shichi watched his footing carefully, treading the thawing path, muddy like grated daikon radish. The two figures stopped in front of Tatsuisa's lodging. Here, too, they seemed to exchange hushed whispers for a moment. Then the two shadows separated, and the woman disappeared through the gate. Watching what the man would do next, Han Shichi saw him turn back, starting to walk in the direction he had come. Just then, he came face to face with Han Shichi, who had been following him. As the man tried to pass him on the narrow path, Han Shichi called out, almost chasing him to stop. Hey, brother, Tora Aniki! Toramatsu stopped, silently. You haven't shown your face in a long time, have you? Where have you been hiding? Han Shichi continued, speaking in a familiar tone. Who are you? Toramatsu peered cautiously through the dim light. Oh, it doesn't matter who I am. We met a couple of times on the second floor of Kujaku Tenement, remember? You're lying, Toramatsu said, bracing himself. You're the guy who was just in that noodle shop, aren't you? I didn't like the look of your face then either.